Thanks, Richard. Good afternoon, everyone. So in the next 15 minutes, I just want to summarize a big body of work, actually, to try and answer this question about, is there actually value in vaccinating people living with HIV? So I'm going to skip through the first two parts fairly quickly. So you've already had great talks on HPV and vaccination itself. I'm going to talk a little bit about immunogenicity and safety, but spend a lot of time asking or trying to answer this question, should we actually vaccinate people living with HIV? I'm going to focus predominantly on MSM because I've only been given 15 minutes, so I can't really summarize everything else. So just as a quick straw poll of what people are thinking, so offering HPV vaccination to people living with HIV should be implemented. Who says yes? Oh, we have, okay. Who says no? Oh, I'm preaching to the choir. Okay. All right. And who's don't know? A few people. Okay. All right. So very quickly about HPV, we know that it is a common viral STI. We know that there is this perfect storm of risks, particularly for people living with HIV who are men who have sex with men. And because of all these factors, which I'm not going to go through, they have a markedly increased risk of anal cancer. So I kind of like to show this. You've already seen a version of this. So this is just cancers in Australia. You can see the most common cancers for Australians, but anal cancer amongst MSM living with HIV is a very common cancer. So we need to do something about this. We know we have a fantastic technology now, HPV vaccination, which is gonna save millions of lives, literally. And we have this guy to thank, Ian Fraser, who co-developed this vaccine. We don't have an Australian version of this, but this is the US thinking about all the different cancers that could be prevented if we implemented HPV vaccine. So I'm going to talk about HPV vaccine as an opportunity to do a lot of good. And this was a study quite a number of years ago now, but it kind of gives you the magnitude of the impact that we could have on anal cancer and cervical cancer, particularly with our nonovalent vaccines, which have been rolled out in many countries. So as many in the room know, HPV vaccination in Australia started in 2007. We got boys onto the program in 2013. And there has been really, unfortunately, really patchy MSM catch-up programs, even though there is increasing evidence of this all around the country. And we also know that there is this whole cohort of older people living with HIV that are not going to benefit from our current HPV vaccination. So just very quickly, in terms of immunogenicity, I guess the concern stems from this phrase here that we have noticed some poor responses to certain vaccination for people living with HIV, for hepatitis, and maybe for shingles. So that there was this concern, could the same apply to HPV vaccination? I just put this here. You'll get a copy of my slides after the conference, but if you want to dig deeper into the evidence, there is a lot of evidence out there about immunogenicity. I want to summarize all of that by saying that, yes, we know that there is stronger immunogenicity if you vaccinate younger compared to older. And yes, there actually is a bit of a signal to show that the HPV antibody levels are a bit less in people living with HIV. But what's the clinical significance? And no one has really been able to look at that. And there's also a last point here about maybe that there is some association with viral load as well. In terms of safety, again, here is the evidence if you want to dig deeper into it yourself. But again, just to summarize that, there's been many clinical trials, a lot of post-marketing surveillance. Now, this is predominantly for the bivalent and quadrivalent, that HPV vaccines are safe. And from what we are seeing with the nonovalent, we can probably extend the same statement. And there's been no adverse impact on CD4 or viral load. It is quite interesting, the BIVA statement here in their guidelines, if someone has a CD4 less than 200, they said wait until they are on ART and then give the vaccine. We don't have this in the Australian guidelines, and as far as I know, not in the CDC, the US guidelines as well. So let's talk about, should we actually vaccinate people living with HIV? Let's look at the evidence. So we know the key facts are that this is a safe vaccine. It is licensed up to 45, but we also have good trials beyond the age of 45, so up to 60 or even beyond of people living with HIV that shows that this vaccine is immunogenic and safe. We already know that it is most efficacious to give to people who are naive. So it's important to note that this is not a therapeutic vaccine, although I'll sort of give a caveat to that in a second. And also the stronger immunogenic response if you vaccinate. So we need to keep up our vaccination programs for really young, this cohort. So that's all a good idea. I guess the hesitancy to vaccinate stems from this question here, although not in this audience. Sounds like you're all convinced already. But how effective or how cost-effective is it to actually vaccinate? And I think that stems, you can kind of answer it by trying to get the answer to these two questions. For the patient in front of you, how likely are they to already be exposed to HPV, and how likely are they going to be at risk for acquiring new infection? So the question is actually not very easy to answer, and predominantly because we can't clearly identify the person that actually needs the HPV vaccine. We know that if we did do a swab of all three sites, mouth, anus, and penis, we get the HPV DNA result, but that doesn't mean that they have not been infected in the past. Others might say, why don't we just measure the antibodies? Maybe that's a marker of their past infection. But we also know that it's not very sensitive, so it's not a good marker of the need for someone to be vaccinated. Many of you in the room may know of this trial by Timothy Wilkin that was published last year. It was a placebo-controlled trial. It used a quadrivalent vaccine. They recruited 575 people from the US, 82% were males. And they were quite well, I guess, median CD4 606, 88% virally suppressed. At the end point was looking at this new persistent anal HPV. And they actually stopped it early. And I was quite depressed when I saw this paper because they essentially found no significant difference between those who were vaccinated and also the placebo group. So you can see this is some social demographics. You can see that in terms of the anal HPV DNA, so current infection with HPV, you can see quite high proportions of people who were already having that vaccine type. You can also see here, with the caveat of seroprevalence being not that sensitive, but you can see actually a lot of people have already been exposed to HPV. So maybe that could explain. So my take on this study is that, you know, this is a population level recommendation, but I think we as potential, we need to think about the patient in front of us. Is there value for that person? And the other thing that was a limitation for them, they didn't actually report, unlike Mary's study, about what proportion were seropositive to all four HPV types. So is there potential for some people who maybe were not already exposed to all four? Maybe they could get some benefit. The trial was stopped early, but we also know that there might be some potential benefit if you kind of kept watching the people. But they only evaluated the quadrivalent, which is, I think, an important point, because now we have the nonavalent, which has a few more HPV types. So maybe there is that partial benefit there. The caveat to this therapeutic vaccine, it's a bit interesting because there has been quite a lot of observational studies, and you can look at it yourself just at the corner there, where people who have already been exposed to, like people with HCIL, so therefore they've already been exposed to HPV, they actually had a 50% decrease in recurrence of HCIL if they were vaccinated against HPV. No one really understands the exact mechanism for this. Perhaps it's just preventing new infections that they weren't already exposed to. Maybe there's some immune sort of response to it, the antibody response or the cell-mediated response. So we're kind of looking into that. So note that these are observational studies. So there is, thankfully, an RCT coming. So they started recruiting 2 years ago, but unfortunately, they're not going to tell us the answer until 2022. So it's a few more years' time, but they're going to randomize vaccination 345 people and look at this phenomenon. So whether we know that's not truly therapeutic, but perhaps there's some sort of partial therapeutic effect for HPV vaccine. So I think one of the things that we need to think about is this question here: how likely are people to acquire new infections? And perhaps that could help us see the value of HPV vaccination. So this is a study that's in press at the moment, so it should be out in the next month or so. So this is a study that I led with people, my collaborators there, as part of the ACE study. And we looked at HPV, the potential for HPV vaccination to be valuable in this group. So these were purely people living with HIV, 100% people living with HIV, 279 of them. So the median age was quite high, so 50. Median CD4 count, again, quite healthy group, 601, 86% were virally suppressed. And we measured anal HPV at baseline and 2 years later. And we were quite interested in this question of the incidence as well. So similar to what Mary presented of the HPV vaccine types. So in other words, what's the opportunity lost? So if we had actually vaccinated them at baseline, could we have prevented these HPV vaccine types? So this is a busy slide, but I just want to show you that the incidence by age. So you can see about 12%. This is the quadrivalent types. So as expected, as you get a bit older, you've got a bit less incidence there, but the younger people had higher incidence. And if you saw the nonavalent ones, that's the equivalent there. What's interesting here is that we tried to look at people who had all the vaccine types at baseline, and you can see huge numbers that essentially were saying that virtually everyone that we saw could have had some potential, value from the HPV vaccine. Again, with the caveat that perhaps this is not capturing their past HPV experience. But even if you kind of halve that figure, it could be potentially 50% of our cohort might benefit from HPV. In the UK, they've done something similar a few years ago. So this was a study done in London in 2010 and 12. And they also found that nearly the whole population of MSM also could have benefited from the vaccine. So what happened in the UK was that they had a joint committee on vaccination, and they actually set up a program where they are actually vaccinating all MSM, whether they're HIV positive or negative, up to the age of 45. And that's only through the GUM clinics. So it started in 2018. It's undergoing evaluation. So it'll be really interesting to see what the population effect of implementing this HPV vaccine is. So I think the take-home message for us is that yes, we have responsibility for the public and the purse strings that we are assigned in health, but we also have a responsibility to the patient in front of us. So hopefully I've shown you that HPV vaccines are immunogenic and safe. Think about the patient in front of you. I always do an informed consent with the patient in front of me. And generally, I say if you do have a spare $460, just do it. It's interesting that in the Australian Technical Advisory Group, they actually do recommend the nonavalent vaccine to males age above 26 for those who are high risk, including men who have sex with men. And the take-home message in terms of the population level, so as a health economist, with an eye looking at the evidence, I don't think it's cost-effective unless these factors occur. So unless the vaccine drops a lot more in terms of price, if this partial therapeutic effect is real, that's going to help a lot. And also with lifelong immunity. So as we know, we have evidence up to about 10 to 15 years of immune protection. But what happens in 20, 30 years, we don't know. So if we can get these three factors better, then I think it will be cost effective. Here are some resources you could have a look at yourself. And a plug for the gonorrhea special issue, which has nothing to do with HPV. But please have a look at that. And thank you for your time.